This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan, and with me at Joyce Go and Tan Ching Han with the top business stories of the day. We begin with a story of the Ministry of Finance. It's confirmed that it owns a majority stake in the Exchange 106 Tower. This was revealed in a parliamentary reply to Pandan MP Rafizi Ramli of PKR. However, the transaction appears to raise more questions than answers.
Yeah, look, so we all know, the building in question, it's that tall glass tower that's located at the Tun Razak Exchange over there in KL. You're probably driving past it right now, or you can see it there on the KL skyline. So it's that tall tower near IKEA Cheras, across from Zouk and also across from RHB's main HQ. So when it gets completed, though, perhaps at the end of this year, it's going to be the tallest tower, not just in Malaysia, but also in Southeast Asia.
So this latest development, it confirms what was first reported in the Edge Weekly earlier this year, that the Ministry of Finance had bought a 51% stake in Mulia Property Development, the company that's developing the tower. So basically, here's the timeline, guys. Initially, all of TRX was under 1MDB. Then in May 2015, the Mulia Group had acquired the 3.42-acre land on which the tower is being built on, and also development rights to the building. So this is for 665 million ringgit. So now, we all know that Mulia Group sold a 51% stake to the Ministry of Finance, apparently at the original price.
Now, some critics are saying that this lacks a transparency. What do we actually know about the price tag? You said that's the original price. Does it mean it's 665 million?
Yeah, I guess so, because those are the only reference points that we have, right? Although in Rafizi Ramli's request or question in Parliament, he explained for a detailed breakdown, but that wasn't forthcoming. So this is basically what was reported in The Edge today. What we know, MOF purchased that stake at the original price. But it then begs quite a few questions, right? So if that's the case, why was Mulia Group so willing to let that controlling stake go? Again, 51%. Why are they so willing to let that go without gaining much from it? Because initially, Mulia Group had the rights to all of it, right? 100%, right? Then, since 2015, they've taken on the risk, they've invested all the capital into building that tower. And after all that, here we are a few months, less than a year away from the tower being completed. Then they give it up, 51%. They gave it up at the original price, So the question is, what was so compelling that Mulia Group, was so benevolent that just giving up that 51% at the original price?
And the other question that I guess needs to be asked is the best use of government resources, and should government be involved in activities like property development?
Well, looking into this acquisition, it was done via a special purpose vehicle, Sharad, called MKD Signature Sundaram Berhad, which was a 2 ringgit company. And the directors of that company are MOF officers, right? So we have Rashida Mohamad Sias, who is the MOF's deputy secretary in the commercial sector at the Government Investment Companies Division. We have Dato' Ashri Hamidin Elias Hamidon, who is GIC Division Secretary. We also have Dato' Sri Mohamad Isa Hussein, Deputy Secretary General of Investments.
Yeah, so basically the MOF is saying that their involvement in this Exchange 106 tower specifically is so that this project gets done faster and smoother. But if you, compare those kind of statements versus the idea, the notion that governments are not necessarily the most efficient, right? You leave those roles to the private sector, right? So, is there a role for the MOF to be developing properties? And it's also one thing to say have that kind of exposure via GLICs, those government-linked investment companies, but in this case, the MOF has a direct stake in developing the Exchange 106 tower.
Okay, there's another issue, and that was also pointed out by PKR's Rafizi Ramli, about a 2 billion ringgit debt facility that the Ministry of Finance is pumping into the project.
Yeah, so this 2 billion ringgit debt facility is from HSBC. And by the way, on a separate note, HSBC is also set to spend 1 billion ringgit on their new HQ in TRX. So, but back to the tower itself, with this 2 billion ringgit debt facility, what does that mean? This debt, what is it taken for, right? Is it to restructure 1MDB's debts, or what's it about?
Well, Well, that's the thing. So, you know, questions are being posed. You know, even shortly after the Edge Weekly first had this story in the, I think, the January 8th issue, right? Questions are being posed. Is this actually a bailout of 1MDB? Now, to be fair, because it's what we do, right? I mean, to be fair, it can be argued that with a bigger stake in this project, you know, the government could earn, well, could see a bigger share of the returns once this project gets up and running. I mean, there've been plenty of investments and big names attached to it already, right? But the point of contention here is this. How are they getting there, right? What's the cost of that 51% stake? And whether or not those returns from this project, you know, are going to be enough to offset that 2 billion ringgit debt facility, you know, the cost of that 51% stake, other costs, other risks, etc., right? And also, again, like Sharad, you mentioned, you know, whether or not this is the most efficient role or the most appropriate role for the MOF and whether they are being transparent.
Now, in other 1MDB-related news, the producers of A Wolf of War Wall Street, that movie, has agreed to settle claims that it financed monies with money siphoned from 1MDB. It will settle for $60 million. That's over 234 million ringgit.
Yeah, so this was a settlement between the US Justice Department and Red Granite Pictures Inc. And that movie production company was co-founded by Reza Aziz, the stepson of Dato' Sri Najib Razak. And the settlement will also cover claims against the Red Granite's rights and interests in two other movies that are those are Daddy's Home and Dumb and Dumber 2.
But the question is, you know, read the reports, it suggests that they agreed to pay the monies, but they, without actually admitting to any wrongdoing. I mean, that's something that mystifies me. Because it seems that if you
settling.
So this is a legal issue. It's like,
You know,
legal term, settle, right?
Yeah. You settle it, so but you don't actually incriminate yourself by doing so.
I guess we've got to get a legal expert in here to kind of talk to us about the implications of such a settlement, right?
Okay, and you know, the story that keeps on giving 1MDB, also another more news. Alex Turnbull, son of Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, claims that he was sidelined at a Goldman Sachs after he blew the whistle on deals involving 1MDB.
Yeah, so this is according to a report by The Australian. So the younger Turnbull said he raised concerns with his then colleagues at Goldman Sachs. He was shocked at the high prices and lack of clarity in the documents related to 1MDB. However, he was not directly involved in the raising of those $6 billion in bonds. So, and after he blew the whistle, he claimed he was B-tracked. That was the term that he used. And then he later resigned from Goldman Sachs.
Okay, let's move on to the insurance sector. We have news that Prudential is the latest foreign insurer to be in talks to divest its stake in a business here.
Yeah, so Prudential's Malaysian unit is in talks with Coop to sell a 30% stake, and the stake is valued at about $435 million, so that's about 1.7 billion ringgit. And basically, you can see overseas insurers racing to comply with new foreign ownership rules.
So the question is, why is Prudential divesting itself?
Okay, look, so Bank Negara has this deadline, right, of about June this year, whereby foreign insurance companies can only own up to 70% of their entities operating here. So 30% has to be taken up by local entities. Mm. So you've got all these big institutional funds, you've got EPF, Kuala, PNB, you know, etc., all in the news, reportedly, you know, making some kind of foray into this space, or perhaps extending their presence in this insurance space.
They're the only ones who have deep pockets, I mean, to buy the stake, right?
Yeah.
Either that, or if the foreign insurers look into listing the 30% stake that they have to divest.
So this seems to be a move against a liberalisation, away from liberalisation, towards a much more kind of protectionist approach to the insurance industry.
Yeah, well, protectionist, but on the flip side, you know, Bank Negara says that this allows opportunities for local players to then step up, right? As opposed to these big foreign insurance guys sending off all these monies overseas.
Actually, the foreign insurers had to divest their stake, the 30% stake, some years ago already. It's just that Bank Negara or the regulators weren't really, you know, they kept pushing it forward, and eventually last year, Bank Negara is like, okay, I think there's a hard stop, June, end of June, next year, 2018, this year, and yeah, basically that's what they're all scrambling to do
now. Yeah, but even then there's some question marks about whether or not it's a hard stop, you know, maybe have a proposed plan in place by June, so yeah, we're kind of waiting to see.
At least they're doing something about it.
Protectionist measures often have that kind of reasoning. You want to help the local industry, you want to protect domestic interests and such, right? It's still protectionist as opposed to liberal. Okay, today is International Women's Day. If you heard that grill, you wouldn't be mistaken about that. And then there's some cheer for the day. According to a recent Grant Thornton study, the percentage of women in senior management positions has risen 28% this year. This is up from 24% in 2017.
Yeah, Sharad. So the annual Women in Business report also revealed that some 80% of businesses in Malaysia now have at least one woman on the senior management team. Meanwhile, in the global setting, 75% of businesses globally have at least one woman on the senior management team now. So this is an improvement from over 66% in 2017.
Yeah, so it looks like, you know, Malaysia is above the global average there. So again, 80% versus the global average of 75%. Having at least one woman on the senior management team. And I think we here on the Morning Run right now, we are doing pretty well. We're also meeting that quota right now.
It's not even half. Come on.
Yeah. Well, yeah. 33%.
Yeah. And especially on International Women's Day, it should be like more women, less.
I get it. I'm just following whatever Grant Thornton says. You know, at least one. It's okay.
Yeah, well, you know.
It can be better. At least one, but there's always, you know, we should aim for aim higher.
Okay. Well, there is progress. Apparently, there's still much to do, and that's obvious. According to Grant Thornton, introducing policies alone is not enough. What to drive real progress and wider culture of inclusion needs to be championed from the top to create change.
Yeah, so Grant Thornton, Malaysia Director of Technical and Corporate Affairs, Sylvia Tan, said that there is compelling evidence of the link between gender diversity in leadership and commercial success. So it's not just having that whole, it's not just proxies having women on boards or senior management roles. There is actual commercial success by having gender diversity in your company or at the top.
And I think it's also extending it beyond just the the decision making roles or these kind of perceived quotas and whatnot, but also in terms of like the true wealth, right, that's actually generated, whether there is this disparity still between the gender and between the genders. Because if you look at the Forbes Billionaire 2018 list, only 10% are of the top 100, so 10 women in the top 100 of Forbes Billionaires 2018 list, right? So whether or not there needs to be a redistribution or an equaling or a raising of the share of women when it comes to global wealth.
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll have the bulletin. Then we'll be back with a look at the stock market and more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.